You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
We're looking for a guilty verdict, and we're looking to see if all of the talk that took place and has been taking place after they saw what happened to George Floyd, if nothing does not happen, then we know that we've got to not only stay in the street, but we've got to fight for justice. But I am very hopeful, and I hope that we're going to get a verdict that say guilty, guilty, guilty.
April the 19th, 2021, those are the words of Congresswoman Maxine Waters, Democrat, California. She was in Minnesota. She's talking about the Derek Chauvin trial with George Floyd, of course, his death, and the closing arguments have been underway throughout this morning in that murder trial. The jurors are going to be sequestered to make their deliberations after all the closing arguments are made. But here's Congresswoman Waters, a member of Congress in the streets of Minnesota, violating a curfew, by the way, violating a curfew that the governor had put in effect for that state, a Democrat governor. And she was out with the crowd and saying, we want a guilty verdict. And it's not just any verdict. She wants a murder verdict. And basically, making statements, as you heard, if we don't get that, then we're going to call for more action in the street. Now, how far she wants to go and say with that, I'm going to have to leave some of it to your interpretation. What she says is pretty clear. So I'm not going to try to reemphasize or rather try to reinterpret what she's saying. I will ask, with those kinds of remarks, if there is more violence in the streets, if the verdict comes back and it's not what she wants or others want, would that be akin to what state-controlled media said about Trump and his address to the group on January 6th in D.C., and then blaming him for what happened inside the Capitol? I'm asking. The point she's making also is not just guilty, but guilty of murder. I mean, Derek Chauvin is now charged with second-degree murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter. Could be any one of those cases. The charges carry penalties anywhere from 4 years to 40 years. And, of course, we're going to have to wait and see. The prosecutors rested their case last week after 38 witnesses over 2 weeks. The defense called only seven. And of course, all this goes back to May 25, 2020, when the video circulated wildly and widely of Derek Chauvin, police officer, after George Floyd is on the ground, his hands handcuffed behind him, and Derek Chauvin's knee in the back of George Floyd's neck. Now, we saw that video a lot, but during the testimony of the case, according to testimony, and this would include prosecution witnesses as well, his knee was not in the back of his neck all that time, mostly on the shoulder for the most part. Well, the jury's going to have to decide, did that still contribute to the death? Because, of course, there has been allegations, and more than allegations, documentation that Floyd had had previous drug incidents and problems with it, and heart-related drugs, and he had drugs in his system. Not looking to explain anything that happened. I'm just saying I want you to look at all the facts. And I will have to admit, that was one of the cases that when I first saw it, I said, that's wrong. The officer went over the line. Because all I saw and all we were told is he kept his knee in the back of his neck for a full 9+ minutes. Well, see, that's the problem with rushing to judgment. We begin to hear more information. Now you have Chris Cuomo over the Friday referencing some of these various shootings we're having around the nation. And Chris Cuomo makes a statement that some are saying that's extremely alarming, but is there any defense for what he said? Just listen.
And you know what the answer is? You really do. You don't like it. I don't like it. It scares me. Shootings? Gun laws? Access to weapons? Oh, yeah, I know when they'll change. Your kids start getting killed? White people's kids start getting killed?
Chris Cuomo saying we're going to have gun laws when white kids are being killed by police. Is there any defense for that remark? Don't rush again into judgment. I want to break it down for you in more detail as we move through. But I'll also remind you, when we have everyone calling for defunding police and pulling back police manpower, and of course, police are always the culprit. I should correct that. Are often blamed as a culprit, whether or not they're doing their job exactly right. So who's to blame for this shooting in Chicago over the weekend at a McDonald's? A father and some of his children going through the drive-thru, two men in another car get out and open fire on that vehicle. The father is wounded, a seven-year-old girl is killed. Who's to blame then? Lock and load. Ready on the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
If you think disinfecting a home or office for COVID is way too expensive, I've got great news for you. Wellington Environmental can disinfect most homes for less than $300. I know you were thinking the cost would be two, three, maybe four times as much. Wellington can professionally disinfect most homes for less than $300. Cost for most offices, not much higher. You get the same professional treatment that Wellington provides hospitals and nursing homes. Also, Wellington is selling professional fogging devices. The cost, $500. But say you heard about it from Larry Connors and save $100. Here's a phone number to schedule Wellington to treat your home or office. 314-644-4930. I urge you to get on the schedule early. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Be well with Wellington. Wellington Environmental. This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA. Demonstrations, riots, and clashes have stretched for four nights. Police say 140 businesses have been impacted. With the Brooklyn Center City Council banning the use of tear gas, officers and troops with Operation Safety Net used pepper spray instead as demonstrators threatened the fence surrounding the police department. Law enforcement circled the demonstrators and moved in, resulting in the arrest of two dozen. That brought condemnation from anti-police activists such as Minneapolis Council President Lisa Bender, who tweeted, "The force used against protesters and journalists in Brooklyn Center by Operation Safety Net is unacceptable. We are in an endless cycle of violence and force, and the only way to break out is to do things differently." The Hennepin County Sheriff invoked the memory of Minneapolis burning and the abandonment of the 3rd Precinct.
All these agencies from the state, Minnesota National Guard, and others will not abandon the people of Brooklyn Center.
A law enforcement source tells me three guns were seized here last night. Of the out-of-towners arrested, they were from Chicago, Wisconsin, and Florida. Still, the source says there's no information about an organized group bringing people in from out of town.
That's a report from Fox News regarding some of the violence that's taking place in the Brooklyn Center area, Minnesota. Obviously, all of this in play as we near the verdict on the Derek Chauvin trial. It's a hotbed. It is a tinderbox at this point throughout that entire region. And it's not going to ease up, apparently, especially depending upon the verdict. If the verdict doesn't come in, as you heard Maxine Waters say a moment ago, guilty, 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 and she's not talking about second-degree manslaughter, she's talking about a mass amount of murder charges, then she's basically encouraging action in the street. We're going to get into that in a lot more detail in the second hour as well. But we've been having this all around the nation lately. I mean, we have it continuously. And every time there's a police shooting, There's a rush out unless it's a police officer shooting a white suspect or a police officer killed. The point many are trying to make at this time is that we need police to be, one, better trained, and yet at the same time on the other side, you hear those saying, just defund the police. If you take more money out, are you going to get better officers? In fact, are the officers who were there, who are doing the job, doing the right job, doing the best they can, are they going to stay? I'll give you an example of that in a moment coming up from Albuquerque, New Mexico. And, of course, one of the more recent shootings that obviously caught a lot of attention was that Brooklyn Center case where the officer, 26-year veteran with the Brooklyn City Police Department, shouting taser as she's pulling her pistol, or maybe she already had her pistol out, that we don't know at this point, but she, in her mind supposedly, thinks she has her taser because she's shouting taser for the other officers to back up as she fires a taser at Dante Wright as he's in his car now getting ready to race away from police. Let me set that case up for you just briefly again. Dante Wright was stopped, expired tags. As they were running the check, which they always will do, they end up noting that he's facing charges for a felony, and there's a warrant out for him. So they turn him around and start to handcuff him. And at some point, he breaks free from the officer, gets in the car. That's when the other officer rushed forward and fired that shot. And by her reaction on the audio and the so forth, she's clearly admitting that she thought she was firing the taser. She did shout for it repeatedly. But as soon as she fired the shot, she said, I just shot him. That is, of course, Officer Kim Potter. She has now been charged manslaughter for killing Dante Wright. And they've had to put fencing, concrete barriers, 24-hour surveillance around her home. We don't even know she's staying there now, but some of those in the neighborhood are also petrified, saying this is all happening on our street. I thought, you know, they may be at my house, whoever's wanting to make the trouble, or we may be caught up in the violence themselves. So police resources that are available are in some part being put around a home to protect it. Now, the shooting that took place in killing Dante Wright, obviously there are a lot of questions. There's a clear difference, and I've discussed this with you previously. There's a clear difference in just the weight and feel. If your eyes are closed, if I hand you a Glock 19, and then I hand you a taser in your other hand, you're going to note one is considerably lighter. That is the taser. It also has a different feel. It has a different color. It's bright yellow normally. And the standard training is that you always put the taser on the officer's opposite side of where the pistol is. And the pistol is always, of course, on their hip that they're either right-handed or left-handed. That's where the pistol goes. So the taser goes on the other side. So they have to mentally make a reach across their waist to the other side to get the taser. So you can't just quickly grab it out by mistake when you're reaching for it. I believe a Glock 19 fully loaded would probably 32 to 34 ounces. A taser maybe 8 ounces. So there's clearly a big difference in weight. When officers are in the midst of something going down, chaos can happen. It happens in war. We know that. They call it the fog of war at that point. We've had friendly fire take out some of our own troops in every war we've been in. Does that excuse what happened? Is it still a lack of training, or is it at that point that something goes wrong? And again, does it get back to training? Was the training correct? Again, we're talking about not a rookie officer in the shooting of Dante Wright. We're talking about an officer, Kim Potter, 26 years on the force. In fact, I believe she served as a union president for that Brooklyn City Police Department. But the attorney representing the Dante Peters family, Ben Crump, in expressing his views of what the family sees, is no accident. That's the way they're seeing it. That's the way they're classifying it. So I'm going to let you hear from him, and then also right behind him, you're going to hear from Brian Peters, who's the Minnesota Police Association union chief, and his view of what went wrong and when it went wrong. First, Ben Crump, the Wright family attorney, followed immediately by Brian Peters, the Minnesota Police Association union chief.
A Glock 17 and a taser. So it's very difficult for this family to accept that this is an accident.
The head of the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association says Wright made the fatal mistake.
Dante Wright, if he would have just complied, he was told he was under arrest. They were arresting him on a warrant for weapons. You know, he set off a chain of events that unfortunately led to his death.
Now, there's a point being made, obviously, that if you're complying with police, you don't have anything escalate like that. But the moment you start fighting back, regardless of what your mindset is or whether or not you think you're being improperly handcuffed and improperly taken into custody, once you start on the street, things can escalate. I'll remind you again, while we're looking at the Dante Wright case, and I put it up at Larry Connors USA Facebook, the shooting the other day, or actually back in Feb, the video just recently released, of the New Mexico State police officer who stops a vehicle, a large white pickup, dark tinted windows, which exceeded the standards for New Mexico. The officer stops the vehicle, walks up to the right side, gently asking, hey, can I talk to you? Can you lower the windows? And they have a little conversation, so he asks the driver to meet him at the back of the vehicle. And they both walk to the back, the driver coming from his side, and the camera on the police cruiser shows as he comes out, he's got an AR-15 in his hand. Down beside him, the officer is just simply walking back to meet and talk with him. And immediately the gun is raised and the officer is hit repeatedly. And later that gunman was shot down by police after a 40-mile chase. When officers are trained to be on the alert all the time, and then something like that goes down, you think, obviously training failed then. Did training fail now with Officer Potter? Or, if you're going to believe the Dante Wright concern, it was an intentional act on her behalf. Well, again, a court's going to go through the proceedings. But when we have all of these cases, and we also have not just those in the street, but when we have members of the legislature, as with Congresswoman Waters, in the midst and urging that if we don't get the verdict we want, then we need to stay in the streets. That's not promoting peace. It's not promoting law and order. But aside from that, as I said, we'll get into it in more detail the next hour. The current view of police officers for many is either that they are absolutely out of control. They're looking, they're going around looking to shoot and kill, specifically black residents. And their training was never effective, or if it was, now they're simply adjusting to justify something they might be doing wrong. And then the other side is, police are always right. They're doing the best job they can. Now, I will not say they're not always right, and I don't know of any officer who would stand and blanketly endorse every police action. I don't know of any officer who would do that. But at the same time, there is a defense of the blue line that is valid, but there's also a sense that that's overbaked some cases because not officers do follow the law, and there are officers who need to be held accountable. But what we have in the streets now is just the entire assault against police officers just being a law and order officer. That you're under attack, for slurs, slanders, and other issues as well, in addition to physical attack. And it is causing a crisis in morale and a crisis in police departments. Out of Albuquerque, New Mexico, the police union president, Sean Willoughby, talking about that officers not only worry about what they're facing in the street and the attitude they're getting, but also leadership, political leadership, and they feel they're being used as pawns, and many of them are simply bailing out.
Who wants to sign up to be at the spear of the biggest, most volatile political football in the country? There's a lack of trust with our administration. They were not supported. Just a year ago, we were on Fox and Friends describing the chaos that happened when our ERT unit stood down as criminals violently took down a statue where one person was shot. So we were chastised for not getting involved then, and now we have an individual that's being removed from this counter-protest for doing absolutely nothing wrong. He didn't violate any laws. He was exercising his constitutional rights within the city of Albuquerque, and we had a sergeant taken off of his job, gun and badge removed. Who wants to live under that type of scrutiny? Morale is gone in the Albuquerque Police Department. They don't trust their leaders. They don't trust the city, and they're tired of being managed by politics.
As I've asked repeatedly, who wants to be an officer nowadays? From the White House, a response from President Biden regarding Maxine Waters' remarks. According to the White House press secretary, Biden believes protests must be peaceful. Did not directly state whether he agrees with her call to action if she doesn't like the verdict. And more on what's happening on that issue and more. Stand by, please.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at LarryConnorsUSA.
Walk out the door, just turn around now. You're not welcome anymore. Weren't you the one who tried to hurt me with the spy? Did you think I'd crumble? Did you think I'd lay down and die? Oh, no, not I. I will survive.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So back to the concern about what are we going to do if we're going to defund police and pull them out. We keep hearing people say, many on the left, progressives, say that we just don't need police to do these jobs. And in fact, I heard one the other day suggest police officers don't even need to carry their guns. They don't need to carry their pistols when they walk up on a car stop. It's a, quote, routine car stop, which we told you repeatedly. There is no such thing as a routine stop, as the officer in New Mexico found out earlier this year, and many other officers have found out. They're not supposed to carry their weapons when they go up and stop a car. Does anyone out there that says and believes that, do you want to be stopping a car, not knowing who's inside or what you might have stumbled across without some kind of protection for yourself? Do you want to do that? Really, I want to see you sign up today to be a police officer. And when you leave your vehicle, just leave your weapon in the car. In the meantime, of course, we continue to have the push for gun control laws each and every time you turn around. The shooting I mentioned a moment ago in the McDonald's, would a gun law have stopped that, a gang shooting, targeting the father? Whether or not he was a right target, maybe he's a wrong guy. Maybe they were shooting the wrong guy, but if he was involved in some kind of feud with some other gang, drugs or whatever, I don't know. But the bottom line is his 7-year-old child is dead. Gun control going to stop gangs from doing what they want to do? Of course not. And you got Senator Ralph Warnock of Georgia calling for a gun control, obviously. And yet, I want to point out to you that Georgia Democrat, I'm looking at some Federal Election Commission filing numbers here, show that despite him calling for more gun control, the Federal Election Commission filings apparently showing that he paid something like more than $100,000 on security services for a private security firm as recently as Feb of this year. In other words, he spent six figures on private security. Can you afford six figures of private security if we don't have the police? This first-term senator pushing for gun control following the deadly shooting that killed eight in the Atlanta area, saying Congress must pass, quote, reasonable gun control. And then during a Meet the Press interview, he questioned the Georgia State Legislature on gun laws and asked, quote, how the shooter was able to kill all these folks the same day he purchased a firearm. The shooting most recently that took place, we're also being told that the shooter again, the one at the FedEx facility last week, bought both weapons legally And yet police had been to his home previously, confiscated a shotgun because there was concern about his mental health. So how did he get cleared by the checks we have in place? That comes down to the point, the laws and rules and regs we now have for gun control. If you're not following them, then what's adding another law going to do anyway? If he were properly vetted the other day, he would not have gotten those weapons at that point. But you also have to keep in mind, if someone is bound determined to have a weapon, they're going to get it, and especially if they're going to use it in a crime, because they don't care about your stinking gun laws. And then when you turn around while you're seeing threats against Second Amendment rights that you have to do more and more to prove you're worthy of it, you get a U.S. senator that's pushing that kind of rule, and then he's able to pay $100,000 on security services from a private security firm. Make you feel any safer? No, it doesn't, does it? Is President Biden finally beginning to recognize what's at the border is a crisis? And then what happened in that Houston's kid facility? Suddenly something happened. Is it still being covered up? I've got details of that story still to come. Stand by, please.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
I'm sure many of you do enjoy entertaining guests. I mean, it's your nature to be hospitable, but we all draw the line at unwelcome guests. You know, those that come in tramping around, they're 6 feet, 8 feet, more. And when that happens, you do not want to delay. Call Rottler Pest Solutions immediately. Now, I started using Rottler more than 30 years ago because I wanted professionals. Rottler knows what is needed, and at the same time, will make sure that your family and pets are safe. Rottler's still family-owned and operated for 3 generations, protecting homes and businesses. 3 generations. That's impressive. So when you want to safely, expertly get rid of ants, spiders, and other critters, call Rottler Pest Solutions, 877-ROTTLER, or you can check their website, rottler.com, 877-ROTTLER, 877-ROTTLER, Rottler Pest Solutions, rottler.com.
There's no place to hide down here. No place to hide down here. Went to the rock, got on my knees. I heard the angels weep for me. No place to hide down here.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
So President Joe Biden has for the first time described the recent surge. AOC hates that term, doesn't she? Remember, she cautioned you cannot use the term surge because that's a militant term. You're talking about a military action. Well, Biden has used the term a couple times since that time anyway, and so have I, because she wants you to believe the word surge represents insurgents. It does not. It could, but it does not specifically. But, of course, we've not been able to get Biden to actually admit that he's got a crisis south of the border. Well, over the weekend, he got asked by a reporter in Delaware about his policy reference refugee admissions. I'm going to deal with that in just a moment because, once again, it shows how fast this man will cave when the progressives start banging their drums. And Biden had basically decided we're going to cap refugee admissions. By refugee admissions, we're talking about legal admissions. Trump had put in place a $15,000 cap on refugees who can be allowed into the U.S. The Biden White House the other day, April 16th, let me see, 3 days ago, yep, last week, released a memo, yeah, we're going to keep the Trump-era $15,000 cap on refugees who can be allowed in the U.S. in place. Ooh, that set off the progressives. They start demanding, what are you going to do? You got to change that. Well, that's what led up to a question by a reporter about his policy on refugee admissions. And Biden's response said, and I'm quoting, We're going to, he's already turning around. He heard the drumbeat of the progressives, and he did a no-no because he's backing something that Trump had already agreed to. So he said, I got to reverse policy. So he starts saying, we're going to increase the number of refugees. In other words, give me a moment here. I mean, I know we put out a statement that we're going to follow the Trump advice, but we're not going to now because he didn't say I'm hearing from progressives, but you know darn well that was in play. So when he said, we're going to increase the number of refugees, he said the problem was that the refugee part was working on the crisis that ended up on the border with young people. We couldn't do two things at once, but now we're going to increase the number. That is such spin cycle, you get dizzy listening to that. He's saying, we weren't going to follow the Trump order. We only had to do it because of the refugee part was working on the crises that ended up on the border with young people. We couldn't do two things at once, but now we're going to increase the number. What changed? Politics. Politics and the left demanding you cannot keep in place what Trump put in effect. But in the process, in trying to make his defense, Biden used that C word. He did. They've been saying C is standing for challenge. Maybe candy, but not crisis, and yet he used it. And as I've said, some news outlets, including the AP, have told editors and reporters not to refer to the surge as a crisis. I hate that to no end. I mean, we've got mainstream, now state-controlled media, there's your perfect evidence. If they're taking statements from the Associated Press telling editors and reporters don't refer to what's happening at the border as a crisis, that is exactly dictating the words of the White House, state-controlled media. And, of course, where's Kamala? Where is the vice president? 26 days after she was appointed by President Biden to manage the crisis, she's yet to hold a news conference regarding her duties. And Florida Governor Ron DeSantis over the weekend was saying Biden dismantled President Trump's policies, and now there is a huge, he's using a different word, stand by, this could get big. You don't know how big this is going to get. Stand by. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis says now there is a huge C word coming. A huge catastrophe at the southern border. Ooh, wonder how they're going to play that one. I'm not sure they could spell it, so I don't expect to see them repeating it. Brandon Judd, president of the National Border Patrol Council, says it's no accident that the VP hasn't traveled to the U.S.-Mexico border region since taking on that assignment from Biden. According to Brandon Judd, president of the National Border Patrol Council, quote, if she goes to the U.S. border, people are going to expect her to fix the problem so she avoids it. And that's disgusting, he says, because that's putting politics ahead of what's best for this country. Well, there's no surprise there, is there? There is a surprise or a concern of what was happening at some of these child facilities, and in particular, one involving a Houston facility where some 450 migrant girls, ages 13 to 17, were being housed. That facility in Houston had opened just for the girls 3 weeks or so ago. And suddenly, Friday night, ambulances, law enforcement vehicles outside that same facility is located near the Bush Intercontinental Airport. That'd be way north of downtown Houston. That all these vehicles arrived outside the facility, and then that following morning, Saturday morning, buses arriving to transport the girls. The director of the advocacy group in Houston for immigrants said there seemed to be a lot of confusion as to what's happening. He said he talked to an employee about Friday night. He said the people that were there looked like they were a sad stance, kind of their head down, seemed like they were wiping tears away. Well, what the hell happened there? The Houston Chronicle's reporting the closure followed the additional reporting at the crowding of facility and that an adult staffer, according to this, the Houston Chronicle, an adult staffer from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services died in that facility Friday night in an incident they say was unrelated to the transfer of the girls. They do acknowledge those who toured the facility said, yes, the girls were living in crowded conditions despite the coronavirus pandemic. One of them saying there really was no space for social distancing. They were only allowed to get up from their cot to use a restroom as well to shower. Everything brought in was temporary. Showers temporary. They're bringing in temporary restrooms. The space was not equipped to house anybody, much less children. Now, I want you to keep in mind, all the times the left showed up at the border when Trump was in office, showed up at, quote, look at the cage. Look at the cages the kids are on. This is terrible. It's offensive. Locking kids up like this. When he was using the same facilities Obama had. Now, of course, they don't, even in the larger centers, they don't have, quote, I would say, fencing of any type specific. They primarily have been relying on drapes of sheets of plastic to separate folks as for social distancing from one large group from another, but not actually inside. But they don't have anything that might possibly resemble any kind of cage. But it's still the same thing. One pastor in the Houston area said, I talked to some of the girls. The girls were excited. They were having fun. I said, I didn't know about the closure until Saturday morning. So we still don't have an official report from the Director of Homeland Security. What happened? You think you're going to hear anything? Why not? Why wouldn't you? If there's nothing to the story, would that not be why they would suddenly rush out and say there's nothing to see here, move on? You know they would do that if there's nothing to see. So you have to ask, what are they continuing to hide? I mean, when you still got Kamala Harris given the instruction by Biden to start trying to bring all this to a conclusion, and she won't bother going to the border, and of course neither is he, then you know they just want to move forward. Any mistakes, just move forward. Forget them. You need to take a note of this. The Supreme Court is going to be hearing arguments, oral arguments. In fact, they might have started even as I'm speaking, in a potential landmark immigration case that could dramatically affect thousands currently living in the U.S. The U.S. designates certain countries for TPS. That would be temporary protected status. TPS, if they're deemed dangerous due to conditions such as earthquakes, hurricanes, civil war, other armed conflict. And people from those countries who are already in the U.S. after entering illegally can receive privileges such as employment and travel authorization. They are protected from deportation. Well, circuit courts have been split over whether those who entered the U.S. illegally but now have TPS protection can apply for green cards without first leaving the U.S. and then applying to come back. That's been a battle going back and forth among lower courts, and now this is going into the Supreme Court for the Supreme Court to decide, was the intent of the temporary protected status to be a permanent admission? A lower court said treating a grant of TPS as an admission would open the door to more permanent status adjustments Congress did not intend. So we're going to see how that plays out. That's separate entirely from illegals crossing the border now. And then, of course, you know about all the efforts to spend your money on infrastructure. But not really infrastructure. That's just a phrase. It's to get you involved because you do worry about your streets and your roads and your bridges and underpasses and overpasses. Yeah, legitimately. You don't really know what infrastructure is, do you? The left will tell you. Stand by, please.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Well, of course, I know you know what the word infrastructure means, but we don't know. We don't know if you listen to the new lexicon from the left. See, they don't have your stinking dictionary. They don't have any Webster dictionary, Merriam-Webster. None of that. They don't need no stinking dictionary because they're rewriting words as they move through their progressive movement. And they will say, words evolve. They change meanings. We all acknowledge that. Some do. Some words do begin to change meanings. We know that. I've talked to you previously about, you know, in the past, if you said somebody was bad, that was not a good thing. Now, if you say someone's bad, that might be high praise. Well, aside from that, when you look at this $2.25 trillion bill, and there's more to it than that, but they're pitching it as the American Jobs Plan. And President Biden says, quote, is a blueprint for infrastructure needed for tomorrow. Well, gosh, you think, yeah, I know our roads, bridges, we've got crumbling bridges, threatening bridges, and waterways, things of that nature. And maybe you could even put in some broadband for rural areas, and maybe that would be considered part of it. Biden tried to push that point just the other day, as a matter of fact, was he was talking about infrastructure, and he held up a chip. He said, chips like the one I have here, these chips, these wafers are batteries, broadband. It's all infrastructure. This is infrastructure. Well, I might accept some of that. But keep in mind, out of the $2.25 trillion bill, the actual money being spent on infrastructure, as you and I would describe it, roads, highways, bridges, overpasses, things along that nature, they've expanded it. Progressives already saying, well, you know, caregiving, that's also infrastructure. That's right. New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand the other day saying, paid leave is infrastructure. Child care is infrastructure. Caregiving is infrastructure. The real infrastructure in that $2.25 trillion bill amounts to maybe, I'm going to be generous, I'm going to say 8% of the bill. It's closer to 6, but I'll give them 8. Let's say 8. I mean, when you're talking about those kinds of dollars thrown around, $2.25 trillion, that's a lot of money, obviously. So it's not really all going to go for roads and so forth, because we wouldn't need that. We would need maybe 6 to 8% of that entire bill. And if you want to put these other things into something, paid leave, child care, well, fine. Create another bill. Don't call it infrastructure. And, of course, they're looking to expand that. The Everglades system in South Florida, they're saying, is infrastructure, that we've got to spend money on the Everglades. I don't know if you've ever been to the Everglades, full of snakes and gators, but it's a part of our nation's view, and it's very important to the area down there, the ecosystem. But you really want to put money into that swamp after you're trying to get money out of the D.C. swamp? And how much and how will it be spent? You can't even get into a question on that and get a solid answer. And, of course, if you don't buy that, they got another one. Just the other day, Democrat Washington Congresswoman Marilyn Strickland said, affordable housing is infrastructure. Well, again, if you want a bill for making affordable housing for folks, you could probably get support for it. I might go along with it. But when you roll it into this, you're just trying to push anything through you can. Senator Ed Markey, Democrat in Massachusetts, proclaiming climate action. Of course, that had to happen. Climate action is infrastructure and should include key elements of the Green New Deal. Yeah, we could see that coming. And then you also have another Democrat, Lieutenant Governor in Wisconsin, said, quote, police accountability is infrastructure. Some Democrats are admitting, yeah, they're even joking themselves that this might be stretching the limits of the term. I mean, they're even acknowledging that we might be going overboard on this. To that extent, One congressman, Jones, Democrat, New York, tweeting out, supposedly adding to the joke, Supreme Court expansion is infrastructure. Anything they can put in and put it under that title, they're going to do it. And they're going to spend more and more and more. You know what I think they should put in for infrastructure? I think we saw it in the beginning of COVID. I mean, this is critical. You want critical money spent on infrastructure? Then I think we need to spend a lot of money on making sure we no longer have a toilet paper shortage. Didn't a lot of folks run out of toilet paper during the beginning of the COVID situation? We need infrastructure. We need more toilet paper. And that's a fact, Jack. Yeah. That one you get my vote. The rest of it you can put in the toilet and flush it. Coming up in the next hour, more focus on what's happening with the Derek Chauvin trial as the jurors get ready to deliberate. And, of course, Maxine Waters calling for guilty or nothing. Guilty or nothing. Stand by.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.